Now it's a spoon.
Paul. Yeah, this
like guns kill people.
That, well, that's true. If it wasn't for eating utensils, I wouldn't be nearly as fat.
Why does a dog hold his head out of a moving car but he doesn't like it to blow in the face?
Well, that's the thing that teaches human beings responsibility. You don't blow in a dog's face because you don't mess with something that'll bite you if you blow in its face. That teaches us that we're not actually really the top of the food chain.
That's true.
But I was going to talk just a little bit about starting a queen business, queen of new business, and then just a little bit about breeding tolerant bees. Bees are tolerant to mites. And in theory, by breeding bees that are tolerant to mites, by using the same formula, you could breed bees that are tolerant to other things also, but that's totally theory. That's not proven at all. It is a proven thing that you can breed bees just by selecting the ones that survive. You can breed bees that are tolerant to Varroa mites, which is the whole basis for the VSH line. And VSH really should be more of a generic term than a proper name for bees, because Varroa-sensitive hygienic behavior doesn't just belong to one particular type of bee that one guy raises. It's a generic type of behavior that any sort of bee, you can take Cordova and Italians and eventually select them until you get a Cordovan that will live with a higher number of Varroa mites in the hive. It might take a couple of centuries. Cordovans are really pretty and they're really productive for one season, but I was telling the gentleman back there that the experience I've had with Cordovans has been that after about one season of being really productive and really good, gentle bees to work, it seems like they get up every day looking for another way to die. Everything in the world seems to go wrong with them after that one season is over with. But any race of bee or any subrace of bee, you could eventually select from the survivors and eventually get to where that they're going to tolerate more mite pressure. We're really fortunate right now at this point in history if we're wanting to breed bees that are tolerant to mites, because we have some good foundational stocks of bees that we can choose from, like VSH and like Russians and some of these you might call them micro breeders, kind of like a micro brewery. And guys like me or guys like Dave that are breeding relatively small number of bees, producing a small number of bees, but we're selecting specifically for survival. And along with other traits, but the main thing is you've got to have them alive. And there's a lot of good foundational stock that you can begin with now that wasn't available 15 or 20 years ago. And regardless of what you choose, understand what you're getting. If you're getting Russians, they're not going to build up they're not going to start really early in the spring. And they're going to start building later than a Carniolan and later, quite a bit later than an Italian. But when they start, they're going to swarm before you know that they've started. I mean, that's just almost like the nature of a Russian. You'll go out there one week and think, well, next week I'll come clean up this empty equipment, and you'll end up busy and not be able to go the next week, and the week after that you're catching a swarm from them. And Russians swarm from small clusters. They don't have to have the box completely full of bees to swarm. When they do start, they really produce a lot of brood when they do finally start, but they take a long time to start. I pollinate watermelons in West Kentucky, and Russians or Carniolans would work really well for that, because I don't have to have a big hive until May 20. And I can have a big hive of Russians or Carniolans where I live by May 20, because we start having blooms first week of April. And they'll be in good shape by then. But if I'm wanting to make a big honey crop in West Kentucky, it ain't happening with Russians, and less likely to happen with Carniolans, because they just don't have a big enough force of foragers early enough in the season. Our big honey flows are April 15 to March 15, and those, the flows that Italian-based bees tend to store as surplus honey is the same honey flow that gets a Russian or a Carniolan building up and laying brood. So, knowing what you need from your bees and knowing your particular area and the forage that's available in your area, those are all things that go into deciding exactly what type of bees you want to raise. And understanding what genetics you're adding to your line is pretty important to keep you from being disappointed with your outcome. If you've got Italian-based bees, say you have Minnesota Hygienics, and they build up pretty fast in the spring. They come out of the spring with a big cluster. Took a lot of feed to get them through the winter, but they come out of come in the spring with a big cluster. And you want to add some genetics to it, so you add Carniolan genetics to it. And the next year, they scare you to death because they got just a bunch of bees in there in late winter. And you think, gosh, this hive was huge last year. And then they take forever and a day to get started in the spring. Carniolans typically, we have some in South Mississippi and some in Kentucky also. In both places, they're typically 2 to 3 weeks later starting than our Italians. And Russians are about a week later than Carniolans. So those are just some numbers I've made from observations over the last 10 years that helps me to understand what's going on in a hive. If I go to a hive and it's got a caramel striped queen in it, I don't have to wonder how come it don't have nearly as big a brood pattern. They're not going to have a big brood pattern in April. Wait till June and they'll be giant. It'll be a big hive. But if you have a queen that you're satisfied with, and you want to stay away from becoming inbred, I'm kind of a proponent of genetic diversity with honeybees, because I believe that that's probably at least one small part of the problems that our bees have had over the last several years is a lack of genetic diversity. But with bringing Russians into the picture for breeding has made quite a difference. And for all the bad things about them, the Australians made some difference too, because it did bring some genetic diversity to the United States. It brought some other things too that weren't very desirable. But it did bring some genetic diversity. If you have a queen that you like, we have a queen that we really like. So we're going to line breed this queen in this one mating yard. It's our queens and our drone yards out here. Well, if we keep doing that, sooner or later, I'm going to look at a frame of eggs, and it's going to be solid. A solid frame of eggs, and I'm going to think, wow, what a queen. And when I look at that same frame, when it's pupil aged, there's going to be 30% capped brood and the rest empty cells. And I'm going to say, thank gosh, they're removing a lot of this brood. Surely grow is not that bad. So I put a sticky board under it, or do a sugar roll or an ether roll, and there's not any varroa in there. But all those eggs that were solid have gone somewhere. That's inbred bees is usually the cause of that. That they have the genetics were inferior, and the bees have removed the larva or pupa that were not developing properly. It's kind of like the difference in diploid and haploid drones. And you never see, what is it, David, a haploid drone? You never see a half moon drill. Not a diploid, okay. I can't ever go straight. Never see a diploid.
The inbreeding causes a diploid that they consume and take out.
Which is similar to terrible brood patterns with inbred bees. If you want to add genetics, but you really like your queen, nothing wrong with your queen. She's laying a solid pattern. She's doing the things that, and the bees are obviously hygienic. Nothing wrong with a queen. If you want to add genetics, add it on the drone side. Mm-hmm. And you want that, those qualities of the queen, of the queen line. Drones typically, are more likely to influence temperament and color. Queens influence brood pattern and hygienic behavior. They do have some influence over the other things, other parts, traits also, but it's mostly breaks down along those lines. And when we add genetic material, we add it from the drone side. And that's a little bit more complicated because you have to get a breeder queen from somewhere else, from another breed, like a Carniolan, and you have to mate that with your queen or with another queen, and then add those drones, raise those queens, and add those drones into your drone yards. So it takes a little bit of time to keep your operation genetically diverse, and you got to have at least two mating yards. But it's worthwhile to do. Plus, it'll make your bees a lot better overall. But if your bees aren't really nasty to work, if they're really nasty to work, you need to add something on the drone side. But if your bees are nice to work, make sure that the drones are nice to work too. The hives that the drones are coming out of are nice to work too. And when you start a business, the first thing you got to do is be good at the business. When you learn how to raise bees and you get to where that you can repeat your success, you know, anybody can get lucky once, they say. But when you get to the point where that if you know you need 100 queens out of this next graph, you're confident that you'll have 100 queens come out of it. You don't have to worry about that. Then you can actually start making plans to sell queens. And the one thing that I've learned, probably the most important thing that I've learned from commercial beekeepers, is you don't sell from the front side of your business. You don't sell out your seed stock. Make sure you take care of your business first. If you're going to need queens to requeen hives, and you're going to need queens to make up for winter losses, and you're going to need queens to make splits to increase your numbers, don't sell those queens to the public before you get your stuff taken care of. Because if you do, I'll guarantee you that you're going to wish at some point during the year that you had those queens back, because you're going to have empty hives that shouldn't be empty. So when you first start off, especially in a business, in the bee business, sell from your overproduction. And we generally overproduce 30% more than what we think that we'll need. And we know about how many queens we'll sell each year and about how many packages and nukes we'll sell each year and how many queens that we'll sell this year, each year. And we produce 30% more than that. And that, we nearly always have just a few queens that we can sell, like on spot sales. But, it usually runs out just about right if we overproduce 30%. And you might look at that and say, well, then you're not overproducing by 30%. Actually, we are, but every queen you raise isn't going to be a slam dunk queen. And some we requeen hives that before we go to the hive and something just don't suit us. Everything looks kind of right, but it don't look exactly right. We'll requeen the hive. So we use a lot of queens that we don't necessarily have to requeen that hive, but we will because it's just something not right.
in the hive.
Yes, sir.
How many drone colonies do I need if I've got, say, for instance, 20 hives that I'm just, you know, using for production? Say, bringing new genetics to those queens.
You would need, at a drone yard, don't have to be but one hive.
Right.
I mean, a drone yard, that sounds like huge production. Tractor trailer pulling in, unloading 400 hives. It sounds huge, but a drone yard really don't have to be but one hive with a couple of frames or one frame of drone foundation in it. But you'll need two mating yards to keep your genetic diversity and to keep your original queen line.
Right.
You've got to have that one yard for the original queen line and one yard for drone or for drone production.
So you're saying one colony of drones?
One per drone yard. You'll have to have one mating yard.
Right.
I said it wrong. I said drone yard. You have to have one mating yard for your queen line that you're going to keep in production and one mating yard for your, for the drone side of it. So you'll need six drone yards, which is a minimum of six colonies. If you have 20 hives that you're trying to keep up with, it may be just as feasible to get drones from somebody else in the initiative and trade out drones that way. I mean, rather than trying to find locations all over the countryside so you can have isolated mating yards, it may be more feasible for you to contact somebody else in the program here and trade drones. Do things like that, or take your queen cells and put in mating nukes in their mating yard and let their drones mate your queens and then bring them back to your queen yard. And really, that's programs like this, that's one of the biggest boons to the beekeeping community, is being able to trade stock, because you might get all bound up genetically in 5 years, but if you take that times all these other guys, it's not a five plus five plus five plus five plus five equals 20. It's five times five, and you'll just virtually never be tied up genetically like that. If you can get a half dozen or more people working together, where that this guy's got drones that aren't kin to this guy's bees, and this guy's got drones, it's a lot easier to work that way without finding your own drone yards. Now, if you had 200 colonies that you were raising queens from, it would mean that you would probably need about 600 colonies to actually get the work done. And then you would need to find some more yards. And I can tell you, it won't be easy, because not many people are willing to put 100 hives out in the back field. There's a bee phobia that kind of goes along with that. Yes, sir?
If you had to pick one over the other, profit-wise, making queens and making nukes, which one brings in the best income?
Making queens would probably bring in the most net income, because you don't have as much material involved. And you're not selling your material. When you sell a nuke, you're not just selling the bees in that nuke, you're selling four frames. And the wax and the box. And you know, you have more stuff there that you're not really making that much profit on. There's a lot going out the door when you sell a nuke, it's not going out the door when you just sell a queen. So you could probably, money wise, you could probably sell queens and net more money than you could sell a nuke. You'll gross more money, I would imagine, selling nukes. The other side of that, though, is that another thing to look at is that queen sales can go on into October. Mm-hmm. And nuke sales, they're going to quit. There'll be a few people that don't know any better than to buy one in July. And you won't be able to talk them out of it. They're going to die. Oh yeah, I know they're going to die someday. No, but they're going to die in about 3 months. No, someday they'll die.
Well, go ahead, Pollyanna. You know, buy the nuke. I'll sell it if you want to. But queen sales are ongoing from mid-April until
it freezes almost.
But nuke sales are just for a specific period of time.
Is there an advantage to still doing the nukes? I mean, is that part of doing business?
Yeah, really, it is. Because if you sell somebody a nuke, you'll end up selling them another queen someday. And if they like the nuke and they want more nukes, more bees, they'll come back to you. And this goes into the business thing. You know, it's just part of doing business. You give away paintbrushes so you can sell paint, you know, or something like that, or vice versa. And on the business side of it also, you want to keep an open mind toward what you're selling and what you're producing, because every year is not the same. And in a year, if your hives get honey bound and there's no place for the queens to lay, and you don't have anything to do except extract the honey, well, dang the luck. You know, you got honey to sell. Keep your business fluid enough that you can move kind of easily from producing nukes to producing queens to selling honey and maybe get a pollination contract. I had a pollination contract just fall in my lap this year that I wasn't expecting. And as it was, it got really hot, really dry. The honey flow quit. A lot of the queens quit before they were pollinating, was irrigated. And they made a crop of honey plus I got the pollination fees. So if I wasn't prepared to switch from queen production, and I took a lot of hives out of the queen side of our business and switched from queen production into renting them for pollination, then I netted a lot more from the pollination than I would have from the queens this year. So every year is a little bit the same, a little bit different. Just be ready to kind of roll with flow and take advantage of what sales opportunities are out there, but don't sell off from the front end of your business. Sell your overages, and eventually you will build to a point where you have enough numbers to act as a buffer, and you can take early orders because you'll have enough bees in, you know, kind of in reserve that you don't have to worry about covering your own business when you take orders for early nukes or early queens. And that's just good business. Take care of yourself first, take care of your business first, and build your business on itself rather than speculation. Don't build your business on, I think I can sell 1,000 packages next year. Build your business on your profit from selling 200 packages next year and plan on selling 400 the next year, and build it like that rather than speculating on what you might make, because that'll end up burning you. And that's another one of those things like the country song, "Don't Ask Me How I Know." Well, that's been there and done that, you know. And the way I retained my reputation, and reputation, by the way, is really all you got. Because your business is only as viable as your reputation is, and that's an ongoing thing from one year to the next. Nothing is better than a good one, and nothing is worse than a bad one. So if you ever take more orders than you can fill, by all means, find some way to fill it. Even if you've got to pay money out of your pocket, if you've got to buy a $100 nuke to sell it for $80 so that you can fill your orders, do that to keep your reputation intact. And the next year, those people will come back because they won't keep their bees alive anyway.
I'm glad you said it.
You know, that's the truth. The people like us that, and I'm including all of y'all, because we're all beekeepers, and if we're not bee producers, we aspire to be bee producers. We all know that it's just a fact.
honeybees die. And what keeps us in business is not just new beekeepers, it's bad beekeepers. I mean, that's just the long and the short of it. Somebody that can't keep their bees alive, I'll sell them a nuke 1 year. They keep it alive that first year, and it makes very little bit of honey. The next year, it's alive, and it makes a lot of honey, and they think they got this thing by the, you know, got the bull by the horns. And the next year, they call telling me their bees all died, and they want to buy another one. Well, I'll sell them another one, so every third year, I can count on $5. You know, almost take a bank loan out on that. I mean, it's that reliable.
And the same is true with queens, because a lot of people don't know that they're really queenless. And, you know, we're trying to be as fair as we can. We have a paper that we put with every queen that says, make sure you don't have a virgin, a cell. Look everything over, because inevitably people dump their gun and buy that queen from us. And then they didn't need a queen. They had a virgin mating, and then, again, it's not our fault. It's just I wonder how many queen cells are not necessary.
It's just the nature of the business.
Yeah.
And there's not anything that's going to change that.
No.
Because that kind of folds in with human nature.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I'm sure there's not a queen in there. Really? Yeah, I looked. What kind of bees you have? Well, I have Russians, and there's not a queen in there. How do you know? Wasn't any eggs. Well, we've had a drought, and the Russian's probably not laying any eggs. Yeah, but I didn't see her. Is she marked? No, but I know what a queen looks like. At that point, it's like, okay, here's a queen. Because you're not going to convince the person. And there may not be a queen in there. But I'm just always suspicious when somebody goes queenless and... if they're wanting to requeen, that's a different thing. But when a hive is queenless, you just never know if it actually is queenless or not. So you go by, take it on faith that it is, and sell them a queen, and they'll be back. Because, maybe the virgin emerges, the cell emerges, kills the queen that they put in there, takes a mating flight, and never comes back. Roughly one third of the time, that our virgins take a mating flight, they never come back. We have about a 70% average return on our virgins taking mating flights. Sometimes it's as low as 20. And it's nearly always due to weather. Sometimes it's 100%. Very seldom, but sometimes it's 100%. But, on a day like today, really nice, clear day, but the wind's blowing about 25 miles an hour, they're probably not coming back. They'll get up in the wind and they just won't come back. The queen is not the most nimble fly. They're not like an acrobat in the air. They're a real klutz in there. They're going to be blown way off course. And one particular bee yard we had in Mississippi this year, we had a severe mockingbird problem. And we just moved the mating yard. I don't know if they had enough shotgun shells in Mississippi to shot all the mockingbirds.
They were eating the queens. Huh?
Yeah, queens and drones. Yeah. And you could sit out there and watch them catching the drones. But I know that's what's going on with the queens too.
You're right, dragonflies are really bad about that too.
Yeah, they are. Dragonflies.
They out in our mating yard is terrible.
Yeah.
We shoot those with a shotgun too.
Is this somewhat effective?
It's dragonfly there.
Yes,
have you ever promoted the idea of people buying cells rather than native queens? Have you, can you make money doing that? For selling cells in part?
I don't feel like that I really come out ahead on selling queen cells, but I sell them and I give them away too. I mean, in South Mississippi, they sell for $2 a piece. Yeah, I don't know what they sell for here, but a $2 queen cell, if you extrapolate that out into a queen and figure that two out of three of those are going to make queens, you're going to get $6 for three queen cells, or you would get $40 for two queens.
But you have to tie up
the nuke. Yeah, you have to tie up the nuke also. But most of the time, if somebody wants a queen from us and we just don't have a queen, but we have cells, I'll just give them a cell and let them take a chance on it. Most of the time they only want one. Anyway. Yes?
In selling it, the queens, you have them mated, they're coming back, they're laying a nice pattern before you sell them.
Yeah. And, you know, laying a nice pattern, that's kind of relative to the newt.
Right.
If it's in one of those little newts, a nice pattern just means that there's no skips in the cells. You know, she's not laying one, skipping one. Most of our queens have been in a full-size four-frame newt for at least long enough for there to be some calf brood in there for at least a week.
Mm-hmm.
And a week and a half.
Then once the queen is sold out of that newt, you have another queen cell put in there?
We'll actually, most of the time we will have another queen cell, or more likely we'll have another queen, a young queen that we put in there and let her begin her laying career in there as well. We try to raise the queens and the little newts and just kind of rotate them out into the full-size newts and rotate them from there either into our hives or into somebody else's hives, one or the other. That way they have a pretty good opportunity for us to see if they're laying drones or not. And that's what I'm interested in. When you see a solid brood pattern that has a patch of grown brood in it, that's not a big deal. That's the way it's supposed to be.
Mm-hmm.
When you see a solid brood pattern of worker brood and dotted around in it or drone cells, that's not good. That's not right. That's a queen that is either a brand new queen and hadn't really learned how to control fertilizing the egg yet, or it's a queen that is not properly mated. One or the other. Yes, sir.
Use incubators, or do you put cells in the...
I do use an incubator sometimes, but I hate incubators. The reason I hate incubators is because of Murphy's Law. If there is anything that can go wrong with an incubator, it'll be my incubator that it happens to. We'll have a power surge and the stupid thing will kick out, and I have a bunch of dead cells because it got cold.
Mm-hmm.
Or something will go screwy with the thermostat and it'll cook all the cells. 95, 96 degrees, it's going to ruin the cells. Yes.
Do what the computer people do. Get your UPS, uninterruptible power source.
Well, I guess I could, but then I don't know how much that would cost.
$100, $200, something like that. Plug your computer into it at the same time.
Well, I guess I could get a long enough cable, I could plug my computer into it. But our incubator is about 150 yards from the computer.
What does an incubator draw anyway, wattage wise?
Very little. It's about the same as a
light bulb.
Not over 100 watt bulb.
Well, computers pulling
100 to 125 watt.
Computer pull 350 watts down to 200 plus the monitor.
The issue with incubators with the thermostat is humidity and other environmental factors that will make the thermostat not work right. And the little disc thermostats that you use, if they're in a room that the temperature don't vary much, they work pretty good. But if they're in a room where the temperature varies by 10 to 15 degrees a day, they're terrible. Yes?
Do you candle your Kingsville?
Yeah. Yeah, I do. And I candle them with a little LED light and some electrical tape. I just put some electrical tape over the lens of the LED light and hold something that'll just fit the queen cell. Pretty easy to do.
Looking for,
you'll see the queen in there. And
movement or?
Most of the time you will see movement if you look at it long enough. But all I'm looking for is a queen, because when you see a dead queen in a cell, she looks way different than one that's not dead. And they're both the same size and everything, but the dead queen, her body is just not, Well, it's about the same difference as seeing somebody say, want that and want that.
Not plump, is it?
Yeah, it just don't look the same. And you'll probably tear apart a couple of cells thinking it's a dead queen, and then she'll wiggle around after you get her out. Dang, feel a good queen. Yes?
Black queen virus?
Yeah, black queen cell virus, yeah.
Yeah. How do you fix it?
Move.
Move?
When I have black queen cell virus, I just segregate the mating newts where I've got it and change the mating yard. It's kind of an environmental thing that's unique to that one spot. And that's the easiest way to do it.
It's not like a later season kind of thing where it expresses itself or anything like that.
It's usually fairly early season. The only place I've ever had black queen cell virus is in South Mississippi. And I wouldn't have known what it was if the commercial breeders down there weren't having problems with it and I was seeing it in their hives. And I saw some of it in ours. And our mating yards are small enough and our drone yards are small enough that, and we're line breeding down there anyway. That I could just take the mating yard, move it over here, move one drone yard, and I just change one point of the triangle and change the dynamics of where the mating yard was. But it happened, the year that it was so bad, probably 2 or 3 years ago down there, it was mid-April when they were having so much trouble with it. That's a month into their mating season. Mid-March usually starts queen breeding. But one thing to remember is you've got a product that sells itself. And advertising is good and it's necessary, but don't sell your product short because queens are always in demand. Newts are nearly always in demand in the spring, especially. Packages are. Honey is always in demand. All of the products that you have to sell out of the hive sell their sell. So don't underprice your product. I mean, you might can sell more queens by selling them for $10 a piece, but sooner or later you're going to come to the point where you realize why everybody else is selling them for $20. Because you're not going to be able to replenish what you've got. You're not going to be able to buy queen cages anymore because you're broke. So don't undersell your product and produce a good product, keep a good reputation, and work with one another rather than in competition. And I see a lot of promise for this queen initiative, this group, because you obviously kind of got it going already. And at least some of you are proficient at raising queens, and you can act as mentors toward the other people that want to learn. And the people that are mentors get free labor, and the people that are being mentored learn the business and break into the business. And I don't know that there could be enough people raising queens to supply the needs for everybody that wants a queen. So if every one of y'all in here were big queen raisers, I would sell them every one. And I fell into kind of the same situation that Phil did when he was talking about buying queens from Hawaii and making splits and buying bees from Hawaii. I made the assumption several years ago, I used to have bees in East Texas, and we would get our queens from Hawaii and make splits in East Texas really early in the year. And I made the assumption that because they didn't have mites in Hawaii, that they were good bees to get. Well, that was my mistake. They were good bees in Hawaii, but when you put those bees in contact with varroa mites, it was like having a flock of sheep that thought wolves were something to play with. You know? They had no idea what a varroa mite was, and they would just get wiped out. And they were good to start with, but then, I mean, they just would take a nosedive toward the end of the season because of grower. And they just had absolutely no idea of how to handle grower. And, you know, I eventually quit getting bees from Hawaii, not because they were bad bees, but because we had varroa and they didn't. And when I stopped doing that, it was kind of an epiphany because I realized that maybe I need to be getting bees before they have worse varroa problems than we do. And at that point, I realized that I didn't think anybody had any worse varroa problems than we do, so why not raise your own? Which is where you guys are now. Why not raise your own? I'll guarantee you that the queen that you raise will be as good or better, probably better, than one you can buy from south of the Ohio River. I guarantee it. And that includes mine. I mean, y'all can raise just as good a queen as I can. No doubt about it. Mini Pearl, that's all I've got. I'm done singing now. But I'll take questions as long as you want to ask them. If you don't have any questions, that's fine too. Yes?
Is your goal when you produce for like varroa resistance to get to the point where you don't feel the need to open it up and start dusting something, that they will take care of themselves all by themselves?
My initial goal, and really the only goal when I started making our own queen, was to not treat, not have to put the hive out there, and have an old-timey beehive, you know, to put the hive out there, put honey supers on it, forget about it until fall, come back and get the honey. Forget about it until summer, come back and get the honey. That was my goal. And we've achieved that goal. Now, all of them won't live. If we have 10 hives, we're still going to lose 2 of them every year. But those 8 hives are going to make, they're going to make honey, and I'm not going to have to treat them. And the ones that live. Now, from selling our queens and giving them away to other beekeepers and neighbor beekeepers in my area, the bees have the same stuff to forage on, but these other beekeepers treat their bees for mites. And the queens that we raise that they put in their hives make a lot more honey, well, make quite a bit more honey than ours did. So I know that the varroa pressure in our hives has some negative effect on our honey production, and that if I treated, that they would make more honey. But it's a trade-off for me. I'd rather not treat, have a little less honey, and be hard-headed about it. Yes, sir.
I don't treat either, but you're talking, you still use essential oils, though.
I use essential oils in the feed, yes. Right. I do that. I don't do anything other than, just adding the essential oils to sugar syrup or to a paste. And, you know, you can make a paste, but that's treat. I will argue that point.
Are you using the lemongrass oil to stimulate the cream?
Well, it has lemongrass oil in it. It's a mixture of lemongrass oil, spearmint oil, and another witch's brew that I have no idea what is. It's like honeybee healthy.
Right, okay.
Yeah. It's pretty much the same product. In fact, I use honeybee healthy some too.
Right.
You can make your own using lemongrass oil and spearmint oil or wintergreen oil. If you're going to mix the mint oils, wintergreen or spearmint is better than other mints because small hive beetles aren't quite as attracted. In fact, they don't like wintergreen at all. But lemongrass oil, I found that the lemongrass oil has a positive effect on honeybees. It makes them want to draw wax for some reason.
Yeah.
It's just good for them. Yes.
Do you just use that in the springtime when you're starting out in the spring?
I put it in those paddings that we feed. I don't put it in syrup at all. I feed just plain sugar syrup, but I use it in the syrup that we use to make the paddies that we feed. And that way I don't have to be concerned about getting the syrup contamination in honey. I mean, I like the flavor of lemon and the flavor of wintergreen, but when you mix it in honey, I don't know if it'll sell that good. And then with the patty, they won't store that in honey.
Do you have, this is one of my big issues, is mice in your store equipment? Do you have any?
Oh yeah.
It's a nightmare.
I didn't know that I was such a hateful person until I started keeping bees. I learned that I hate skunks, and I hate mice, and I hate wax moths, and I hate both sizes of wax moths, and big ones and the little ones. And I really hate hive beetles. I hate varroa, I hate crepe mites. And occasionally we'll open up a dead owl in South Mississippi, and there'll be a speckled king snake in there, and it gives everybody a hard scare. And, you know, there's just so much different stuff to hate when you're a beekeeper. It's easy to think you become a hateful person. Yes.
I haven't heard it mentioned on any of the bee forums, but I know on the Southwest and where people keep birds, that to discourage mice and rats from eating the bird food that lands on the ground, they lace it with cayenne pepper because mammals.